My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about hey now, hey now, hey now, hey now. Giacomo Fino Anani.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling. Wow. We're back, and yet another hiatus.
Yet another hiatus. as is par for the course now, we've had a very long hiatus this time. This is our longest.
We apologize. This was a tough one. We both did stressful things. I moved and had, count them, 3 apartments fall through over the last month and a half, baby. But we have figured it out. We are currently living in a space that is our own.
Yes.
And it feels good.
Feels good. Matt's had a rougher month than I have, for sure.
I just
put up a solo show, which is like such a stupid, frivolous thing. But guys, this
it was not frivolous. It was very good. It was called Findings.
It was called Findings. And it was at Ars Nova. Yes, Matt was had a star turn as the villain.
That was a spoiler right there.
Oh,
if
my gosh.
If it ever goes up again, well, now you know.
Who knows? Guys, this is our first episode back since the world has fundamentally changed since democracy has had its last nail in its coffin. So, I mean, here we are. We're just going to keep talking about culture, bringing it to you every ball.
Bring it to every ball. Have you found a way to see any light in the days?
This podcast called Making Oprah. It's only 3 episodes long. It's already technically finished, but it's through WBEZ Chicago. It's about how Oprah was like, has evolved through the years. It's excellent. I highly recommend it to everybody. That's been my only light. What about you?
Well, you know what I realized would be the light, but it's been missing. And you know what ended just right in the wrong time because we need it most right now is Ru. Can you imagine? At least we would have that every week.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
but guys,
what poor planning.
But guys, we have 2 lights with us.
Lights in the dark.
Lights in the darkness. they are, oh my gosh, they're just such fantastic people.
Yes.
They're the founders and editors of the women's satirical news magazine, Reductress.
Yes, Reductress is amazing. You may have listened to their podcast, Mouth Time.
With Nicole Silverberg and Rachel Winitsky.
Yes, yes. And also you may know about the show Ha Ha Wow, hosted by Nicole Silverberg, our good friend, former guest.
Yes, also under the Reductress umbrella. And also you may
have
read the book, girl.
Oh, you may have read the book. You may have picked it up at your Barnes & Noble. You may have shopped for it online. It's called How to Win at Feminism.
Guys, get it today. It's good. Such a fantastic book. Guys, please welcome Sarah Pappalardo and Beth Newell.
Yay!
Hi.
We are overjoyed.
The best intro I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's
thank you.
We got it all in, I think.
I mean, it was a little Nicole Silverberg heavy for my taste.
too much.
Too much Nicole. Get her out.
No, we love her.
You guys, you two have been on like legit podcasts with this publicity tour for the book and for the show and the pod. Mostly the book, though, right? But like, this is, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence on this like very lowly but soon to be seminal podcast.
I mean, like, let's just note that like the phrase legit podcast means nothing to our mothers. Nothing to our mothers.
Honestly, so the treatment you have given us so far has been above and beyond.
Yeah. Wow. Can we stay here forever?
Most of our press tour.
Yes. Yep. I mean, there's water in front of them.
There's water in front of you. How was the press tour?
It's good.
It's busy.
It's still ongoing.
Yeah, it's good. No, like the busy part has subsided, but we were just bouncing around a couple cities and like, you know, talking to some youths.
Yeah.
Processing our emotions around the election in real time.
But, like, we were processing them like at the youths.
At the youths and youths and proselytizing the youths.
Exactly. Yes.
Teaching them, indoctrinating them.
Yeah. Yes. Giving our liberal agenda.
Yeah. Exactly.
But then it's so confusing too, because then you're there at these events and you're talking and that you're kind of up there with the mic and they listen to you and you're supposed to say like the thing that's supposed to feel good and we're all still processing it. No one knows what to say or how to feel right now. So that's got to be very weird.
I felt like such a freaking old woman. So we flew to LA the day after the election and it was just.
So we were like, it was like as if someone broke up with you and then you were like in your pajamas and had to go to the airport to like see your family or something. And you're just like, I met Sarah at the airport and we were just like,
Yeah. So we're like, all right, we're gonna figure this out. And the next day we like go to a college and talk to some like adorable feminist group that had like just gotten back from a protest.
Yeah.
And we had like a PowerPoint presentation. We just didn't do it. And we're like, what? I don't know. I was just like, well, what do we do during the Bush administration? Like, we were good at this. Like, we know how to do this. Yeah. We just have to do it again. Yeah. And these kids have, like, no idea how to do it yet. But they're in for a freaking ride.
I mean, strap yourselves in, world. But, like, I think that the act of you being there and just, like, being sort of on display for these people is just a very good thing in and of itself. I don't know.
Showing up is, like, better than
hopefully.
You know, if we didn't show up, like, you know, chaos would ensue. But, like, really, though, like,
I mean,
for all of us.
Yeah. You go on the website and you're like, thank fucking God. Like, yeah. I was on it today and you guys are, all the Lena Dunham stuff is so
Nicole Silverberg.
Good. Oh yes, Nicole.
She's like, wait, no, we have to do, and I'm like, yeah.
Nicole being very smart and brilliant, it. How annoying.
Yeah, I know. I hate when she does that.
She's so great. And truly, like, that Lena shit is insane. But yet again, and actually, I meant to talk to you guys about this one, because, like, I worked with her on, like, this little digital short, and she actually reminds me so much of, like, that friend you have that, like, sometimes says that thing and you roll your eyes and you're like, oh my God, like, she knows better than that. I'm sorry. You apologize for her. But yet she's the most quoted person ever, and she still just keeps going. So it's like,
she must know that.
Do you think she knows? I don't think she knows.
I don't think she's aware. Yeah. We were talking about it in the office today, and I think, like, there's a level of, like, there's something a little bit off, like, I don't know if it's narcissism or whatever, but it's like, it's almost like the type of attitude someone needs to have to break through to her level of success as the woman she is.
Sure. That's a good point.
And so it's like, it's what fuels her, but it's also what makes you constantly be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my God. Not to bring Nicole in back into this, but Nicole, I think on her episode when she was on this pod,
we talked about the Amy Schumer interview.
We talked about that, and we talked about, that was after the Amy Schumer interview, and we were like, the people, like, no, but this is unrelated. This is, we were talking about Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears being good SNL hosts and how that is not unrelated to how troubled they are.
Yeah. Like, so it's basically, I think, like, when you exist in a vacuum of your own ability and intelligence and talents, like, of course I can host SNL with no live performance experience. Of course you want to hear me say this thing when I'm asked this question. It's gonna be thought provoking. She literally broke onto the scene as the voice of her generation. Ironic as that was, you know, it's not. You know, she does think that about herself and aspire for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, anyway, great Lena stuff. Great Lena content.
Did you see the one today?
It's my choice to wait. What is it?
No, it was. She used her connections and to get Ebola. Like, she used her connections to contract Ebola. It was great.
It's just, she's talking about abortions like it's like a fucking summer house. It's like a lake house.
I know.
Exactly. I had a lake house.
Study abroad, someone said. I thought that was really good. Like, please don't talk about abortion like it was study abroad. Like, I wish I had gone to Florence.
Yeah. Oh, whatever.
It's weird. I was saying, it's so weird because I've seen her write essays about, like, women being abused and what their rights are within their marriages and, like, rape and have, like, you know, bearing a rapist child and how in certain states you are legally obligated to, like, allow visitation rights for your rapist to your child or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so she sounds so intelligent in certain aspects. And then she says stuff like this and you're like, wait, have you read anything about abortion? Like, because it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, hot take. I think, there are probably a lot of white celebrity men, probably a lot of what men celebrities, period, that are just as idiotic as her. But you know what? They don't get asked these questions as much.
Yeah. 100%
they don't. I mean, to be fair, though, this was her podcast.
I said it was a hot take.
I
mean, but that's what kind of drives me crazy about the Amy Schumer interviews. I'm like, you guys had all the power to edit this and rethink it and put it out there and present the most sparkling versions of yourselves. And you still were like, this is what we're doing.
There is so much power in those people that celebrities surround themselves with to just tell them they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I recently was doing research on John Travolta and Kelly Preston. I'm doing a show later and I'm talking about Kelly Preston. Brooklyn. Okay. So, like, so I'm just, like, assessing.
You just sounded like a Sex and the City character.
So I was, you know, with Kelly.
No, listen, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. So Brooklyn, right? It's alternative. We talk about celebrities that are on the B, C, D list. All sorts. So, I was reading about Battlefield Earth. You remember this movie with John Travolta, which is like a sci-fi epic, and it was widely called one of the worst movies in the world? And they asked John Travolta about it in the aftermath, and he was like, you know, I actually don't read reviews. There's a team of people around me that's hired to not tell me this stuff. So it's like, you have it right there. I mean, you said it. Like, you're not going to get any perspective other than your own. And you're like, no, there probably wasn't anyone there to tell them this shouldn't go into print.
Yeah. I also think, like, a lot of celebrities are just, like, nerdy teens who now have power. So, like, when you get Amy Schumer and Lena Dunham in a room together, they're both like, I'm in a room with Amy Schumer. I'm in a room with Lena Dunham. And so they're validating each other, and they're like, I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they're like, anything that she's laughing at must be great.
Yeah.
But imagine, like, nobody telling you no, even when you're, like, college-aged. Like, you make tiny furniture, and people are like, uh-huh.
Yes.
And then you're like, fuck, I'm amazing. Like, you don't doubt your ability. Mm-hmm. And then you just say shit, and it's like, well.
She also exists in that weird space between, like, authority young person who's, like, more of a writer and comedian. So I do think sometimes she thinks she's being funny in the midst of this, like, intelligent point, or we're listening to hear one thing and then we hear, like, what she perceives as a joke coming out of her mouth.
Yeah.
And that gets construed. Like, she was, even, like, in the minor dealings with her I had, I was picking up on, like, oh, yeah, you're a normal person who says these things, but, like, unfortunately, you're going to be quoted in print saying them, and, like, you can't.
That, my biggest complaint about her is that people treat her as though she's a comedian, and she seems to also believe it. And she has no comedic experience.
Right.
Therefore, the jokes don't hold up under scrutiny.
Oh my God.
So, but she, like, acts as though, like, oh, that was just a joke. And you're like, no, it's not a joke. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how a joke works.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Even with the show, even with Girls the Show, I always have thought, like, I think when that show is at its best, it's being its most real. And when it tried to be this kind of broader comedy, I was like, I don't buy this. I don't think you guys are very good at this.
Right, there's a lot of shows like that. I would say the same thing about certain episodes of Orange is the New Black, where I'm like, are you a drama or are you a comedy? You seem to think you're good at both, but you're just sort of treading water. Like, what... what's your goal here?
Just
pick a hat.
I think that show exists best in that kind of area where it's like you're seeing the realities and like we're laughing because of the realities.
Right.
But also like it's very hard to do that with that kind of show because at a certain point you've got to talk about, you know, the racial elements of all that. You've got and that's there's nothing funny about it. Like apparently this last season was incredibly dark. I didn't watch it, but
I thought the last season was a little better because it, it felt like it got real. That's the thing that drives me crazy about the show is like the tone like swings back and forth so drastically that you don't really know what to expect.
Right.
And then when it when you're watching a show about a women's prison and it goes super light and fluffy, you're kind of like, whoa, what are
what exactly is this?
Like, are we trying to say that it's fun to be in a women's prison? Because it's not. But this season did get a little darker, and I thought that was like a good thing for the show.
I mean, I will definitely watch it. I honestly heard what it was about and I got so anxious. I just like, I get very anxious watching any television. Like my boyfriend had to watch Westworld before me so that I could, so that we could sit together and he could tell me when something violent was going to happen. Because I genuinely,
He's sort of like your John Travolta team.
He is. And honestly, I watched that show mostly from the next room, like peering over a...
Famously, Matt, we've mentioned this before, Matt has not seen past the first 10 minutes of Stranger Things because he was too scared.
No, I can't do it.
Oh,
and I want to so bad because Winona. I want to so bad because Winona.
I don't think it's that it's scary. It's not that scary.
It doesn't need to be. All there needs to be is like the anticipation.
I just want to like give you a supercut of Winona Ryder. And I think that's all you need. Is
because
like,
I heard that she does some amazing like borderline overacting.
Oh,
and that's
absolutely.
What I'm there for.
She's the perfect caricature of like the crazy mother from the 80s that's suffering. She's so good.
She, yeah, everyone knows. And now all of us, all the accolades are coming in right now, too.
Yeah.
She got the Screen Actors Guild nomination, the Golden Globe stuff. Do you guys follow the, all that?
Not too, too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a very gay thing.
Yeah. Like, sometimes I'm more invested than others. Yeah. Right now, it's like the Trump stuff kind of trumps it, I guess.
Right. We're just not into like celebrating the achievements of film over the last year when it's like...
Right.
I will say there is some really, really good stuff out there that is very thought-provoking right now. Have you guys seen Arrival?
Nobody, I haven't heard really
you should
things.
See it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's really good. It's because it's really a movie about communication. And like, that's very interesting now. You saw it, right?
I saw it, yeah.
Did we see it together?
No, I saw it by myself.
I saw it with Henry.
I saw it by myself, like, I think 2 days after the election. And it was,
yeah,
like,
and it was, it's very, right? It feels very like prescient.
Yeah.
The maybe. Trailer is good.
Yeah. Great. Well, the trailer great. Makes it seem very sci-fi. Like you yeah. think it's going to get to that point where, like, she's on the ship fighting an alien. But it never gets there. It's actually a really, like, intimate, like heady mm-hmm. kind of, like, drama with those elements in it. I thought it was fantastic. And she's my favorite.
That's she's great. Great. Guys, let's talk. Yes, let's yes. talk to Beth and Sarah about culture that shaped you. When did you know... Culture
was for you.
Did you grow up with
so,
culture-wise?
Let's start books, with Sarah. TV, we're movies. Talking about like television. We're talking about books, movies. Like, what really like pushed you into being who you are and like your interests?
Oh my god. Okay, so I was pretty anti-culture until I was 13. I hated mm-hmm. culture.
Why is that?
Why was that? Oh, I don't know. I think I grew up in New Hampshire in a very just like a house with white walls and parents who were very practical.
Ooh. Oh, I see.
And then I discovered television, ooh, which yes. was my first. So, oh, you know what? I should back up. Sorry. My mother tried to introduce me to culture by putting me in a jazz choir when I was 5. And I...
Famously not for everyone.
I hated it. I was in the Sunshine Generation. And I cried. Our director was Penny Marshall, which I'm like,
what?
Still is
Wait,
not a
the
real name.
Penny
Are you kidding? Her name was fucking Penny Marshall.
Oh my
but
god!
But like, I was talking about no, Penny Marshall in New Hampshire.
Not actually Penny Marshall.
Not
like,
unrealistic
up,
to think. That.
I don't know why her name was Penny Marshall. Wait, like, but, she renamed herself. Sorry, this is insane.
Can I tell you though? My grandmother's name is Betty White. That's her.
No,
that's her like, birth. Name. It's not. She married and then changed her last name. But yeah. She was born as Betty White.
That's see, fine. Like, Penny
think,
Marshall. Though.
I think like it was just the generation.
That sentence,
because
she was
like,
born as Betty White.
Penny Marshall is probably Penny Marshall's age now. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. So it was probably just some weird freak thing. But I hated it. I think my mom had a really like cursory understanding of musical theater and wanted like the idea of me doing it was cool to her, and I was mm-hmm. like, no.
Yeah.
And then when I got into high school, I was like, wait, I wish I was doing this.
Oh, no.
And but so like I just watched a lot of comedy on TV, and I became like a dumb comedy nerd and was like obsessed with Strangers with Candy and UCB mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I like kind of like took the back door into theater, and I did like an intercity theater group. Instead of doing like the theater program at my school, because then people would like know.
Oh,
so I'd like run out of field hockey practice and be like, sorry guys, I've got something to do. And
that
would
have been
a
good
that.
Way around it. I too was like too scared to do theater in high school because yeah. of what it would mean.
Yeah.
And I didn't find any outlet for it, but that's cool.
But Sarah sneaking out after field hockey practice to go to rehearsals or what have you feels like a very like teen drama-esque.
Oh, I mean, totally. And then, yeah. like, all the
love,
romance ensued,
it.
And it was just, like, it's a complete cliche. A complete cliche.
Wait, real romance?
Real romance.
Love it.
Yeah,
love
it was great. It was great. So all the things happened, and it was, like, it was great. The minute I got a car, I took an improv class, and then I shuttled off to Chicago when I was in college, and then I was just, like, culture.
This is beautiful.
So you guys are Chicago.
I moved to babies. Chicago eventually. Uh-huh. I grew up in New Hampshire / like Boston area.
Yes, but
I grew up in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Massachusetts.
So we were like, yeah. but we weren't like far away from each other physically.
Oh, okay.
We
physically, right.
But we
other.
Didn't know each other.
Yeah.
Right. So then, okay. Did lots of improv in college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Because you guys met at the Magnet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Into your yes. adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Culture. Yeah.
Culture.
Through Beth. Into culture.
So I guess like my access point, at least comedy wise, I was always like a visual art kind of nerd,
cool.
but
I always loved
them. I was like very into like Monet, which sounds really dumb now no. looking back on it. But when I was little, my dad would tape the SNL episodes and then play them for us. So like at a very young age, I was like very into SNL,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, like age 12 or whatever, I got Instant Messenger on AOL. My AIM screen name was SNL Viewer.
Yeah.
No numbers, no numerals.
No, no, you, no oh, numerals.
She was able to snag SNL Viewer.
I snagged it. the original. Anyway, that was me. And then high school, I was very into like watching, you know, Comedy Central and all that. But I also was very, very into BBC America,
oh.
which we had for some reason. And I watch a lot of like British comedies and like the show called Coupling. That was like, British Friends.
They tried to do that with them in America, right?
Yeah. It was like a British Friends, but like more, I think, like sexually open in the way the British people are.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, stuff like that.
Nice. That's something with British television I've always noticed. Like they had like Queer as Folk before we did.
Yeah.
And I was always like, what is this?
Right.
And I was super young when that came out. So I was always like, but that was kind of, I then realized as an adult was kind of just like a sex show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the British stuff always seemed like more advanced and smarter.
Have you seen Fleabag on Amazon?
No.
It's like, so there's a storyline. I know this is kind of spoilers, but there's a storyline where this character is like a straight guy, but he has a friendship with a gay guy. And then he sort of is like jealous of the gay guy's boyfriend and like is like messing with him. And then it slowly comes out that he's like, he actually is like into this guy and he's like bisexual or whatever you want to call it. But it's just like so much smarter than our television. Yeah. Like to just like have that happen is like, American television would never let a straight guy turn gay.
Yeah, no. Like, unless they saw it like happen like several times overseas. And it's like, maybe can we do it?
Yeah. Like, or I guess they wouldn't, especially they wouldn't let him be like bisexual. You know what I mean? Like they would maybe be like, oh, he was gay all along. But like, it's so smart to like actually portray bisexual people.
Right. Well, American television, I think, especially in the stuff that they borrow from, or they just kind of recreate here, that's done over the seas and like in England, it's they never nail the authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guess they've a lot of people like Shameless, and I guess that feels authentic and feels real.
Yeah, but that was originally a British show.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, a lot of things I've seen that tried to like get remade over here like just flop. Like for example, like
Kath and Kim.
Kath and Kim.
That's the second time someone's brought that
seriously?
Up.
Really?
I'm like, what the? Yeah, I haven't heard that in years.
It's just an old enough reference.
Yeah,
to
I haven't seen Kath and Kim.
I saw the pilot. Molly, God bless Molly Shannon and Selma Blair.
Oh yeah! Oh my God, that was them.
The two of them.
I was wondering. I was thinking
could have
been
a great show. Anyway.
Oh yeah, with them. I was thinking like the X Factor when America tried to do the X Factor. And it was like so blown up.
I know.
It was like Simon Cowell's big break from American Idol. He was like, it felt so fake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like a fan. This is horrible. But I was like a fan of the British X Factor because it felt like they were kind of real artists. It felt like more fun and more authentic in a real way. And I also heard that like 70% of British television households watched the show. Like it was like a national thing.
Oh, yeah, it's like the Great British Baking Show. Like it's just a national treasure.
It's like a national phenomenon.
Question though, were they hotter or less hot than the U.S.?
The contestants or the judges?
Both? I don't know.
Because you know it's all about the judges on The X Factor. Like that makes careers over there. Nicole Scherzinger will never come back to America because she's a superstar professional British talent show judge.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
Yeah. So she's never coming back. But you know what? The contestants on the American version were like stereotypically hotter and like so much more cast.
Yeah.
Whereas like the British version like launched the careers of like One Direction and like Cher Lloyd, who was a thing for a little while, and Leona Lewis
became hot.
Well, like I don't know what happened. I think they just see like some like
you know
some
what?
Like teen sevens, and they're like, yeah, them.
But
put them in a group, gussy them up. We'll figure it out. One of them will pop.
You know what I liked about American Idol, though, or like early seasons, were like the contestants just looked like little normies, like normal people.
Yeah, Kelly Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Clarkson, even Justin Guarini looked insane.
Perfect normie.
Mm-hmm. Perfect normie. Like, I mean, like Kimberly Locke, for God's sake.
Well, it's like British Baking Show. If they did that in America, they would.
they are doing it in America.
They
couldn't find bakers that
like,
hot.
But like the hosts, they would have recast the hosts immediately. They would have like brought them in for auditions to like give them material about how the show should run, and then they would have been like, "Fuck you guys, we're recasting you as like a hot little 21-year-old." You know, and like have her parrot their takes on baking. You know,
right. Oh my God, that's horrible. I mean, aren't they doing that? Isn't there a Great American Baking Show now?
I don't know that. I have
Joel
a blind spot here for the Great
that.
British Bake Off.
Me too.
I don't know much
that's
about it.
That's a blind spot for me too.
Yeah.
I should start watching. Maybe I'll watch it over Christmas.
Sudi loves it.
It's weirdly satisfying. I hate most competitive reality shows, and I was
like it, but it makes me too hungry.
Yes, that's the trouble with food shows. Is that I get hungry?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. What a world. It's Trump's America.
I just started singing The Trouble with Food Shows. Because Kelly's on the
it
brain.
All,
now,
it all goes back
which
to
she
Kelly.
Never is far from my brain.
All goes back
she's never
it's
one.
Good to have like a spirit animal person.
It's her. And that got me in a lot of trouble when I was like in sixth grade and I was acting like her.
Oh.
And trying to also be like a little straight boy.
What do you, in
like
what
I would say the things that she said in school.
You can't do. I mean,
like I was saying like ducka ducka ducka. Like she that was semi-famous for saying like awkward things. She was like the girl next door from Texas. And I would literally, she inspired me to like be like her. She was truly my American idol.
This is what I did in school. And I, oh my God, this is a shameful admission. The Trump episode of SNL. In 2004 or 5, I brought the tape. I taped it. I brought it into school to show my science teacher, who was a huge Apprentice. We were everyone was watching The Apprentice.
Bowen loved Donald Trump.
No.
That's not true.
No, I loved Omarosa, who's now in Trump's transition team and is a despicable human being. Maya Rudolph did an update, like sort of walk on character as Omarosa, and like. Shit falls on her head and it's so funny. But I showed it to my science teacher and I was like, man, The Apprentice is the best show, isn't it? And then she and I were both like, yeah, and that's just a dark, indelible
moment. Burned into your head.
Yeah.
Do you feel like as a nerdy kid, mm-hmm. I'm sort of like projecting
no, do it.
But like, do you feel like you had those moments where you like would bring something into school or like go above and beyond and then later you'd be like, why was I trying so hard?
Just do
the regular
that's
work.
So weird.
Like, what was that? Is there one that stands out for you?
What's an example?
I'm trying to think. I know I definitely gave one of my teachers in high school like a magazine I was reading because it was like I was like, oh, you'll like this article. You know, like just like stuff where you're like, and it was like my lesbian AP history teacher, yeah. And I was like, you're gonna like this. It was about like how they marketed cigarettes to kids or something, and she loved it.
Yeah,
but then you look back. And you're like, what was I doing?
Extra
like,
mile there, and why?
Yeah,
because we're kids and we want to impress adults. And
I love
already
this.
Figures.
Do you have one of those?
Oh, God, yeah. So, do you guys remember the two poets, Verlaine and Rimbaud? They had like a weird love affair, and one of them tried to shoot the other because
it was really heated.
Like,
I want to write
weird.
This.
Yeah. So,
story
my
us.
Friend, my friend Dustin and I like wrote this whole song about the like. Romantic age of poetry, and we made like a whole music video of these like two gay men like having a tumultuous relationship and eventually killing each other, and it was like really quirky. But we like made a whole video back before there was like iMovie, and then we're like, here, class, here it is,
and everyone was like,
that's not,
and they're like, does not
half watching.
I mean,
and you're like,
honestly, I'm proud of it.
Yeah. You
no
should
shame.
Be. I was gonna say that does not sound mortifying.
I mean,
at all.
I just think as an adult, you like you can envision the other kids in that classroom, yeah. And you're like, oh, they hated me. Like,
yeah. Ready? Here's mine. Okay, I wrote my social studies teacher in seventh grade. We were studying. American history, and we were talking about the revolution, and we were talking about the Boston Massacre and the trial that followed. So famously, it was won by the defense. So and I was John Adams, and I was the defense attorney, and we basically had to just recreate the trial. It was just like a recreation of the trial that followed the Boston Massacre to see who was at wrong. Historically, my character won, but I came in with a 9-page closing argument that I did for the class, and I personally attacked people in the class for the way they had acted during the trial. I was like, Paul Revere came up here and couldn't even get through his testimony, but it was like half historical grounds, and historically, we won.
Yeah, but you were like subtweeting everyone in the room.
Yes.
But seriously, and it was so long, and I lost.
Wow.
And they voted against me because it was too good. Oh, and my social studies teacher came up to me because he could tell I was really upset. Oh, and he was like, I just want to let you know that was a really good piece of writing and I'd love a copy of it. And I like love Paul Tupagna to this day because he like did
he, like,
that for
he
me.
He took that to the teacher's lounge and they
like,
giggled
can
over
fucking
it.
Fucking believe.
Oh my God. That's pretty special.
Do you have one?
Well, I mean, it was that.
Everything.
It was exactly that.
I think it was, oh no.
Oh, no,
oh I got really, thing. It was that, but then like, as far as an academic thing goes, like in our drama class, or no, it was just an English class, but we got the fuck into sonnets. I got the fuck into sonnets.
Oh, poetry was a whole thing.
So I brought in, like, comical sonnets about, like, taking a shit and, like, like farting in a piano lesson, like, stupid things.
I still remember a line I wrote in my one of my poems that we had to write in eighth grade or ninth grade, and it was, the poem was called Venom, and the line was, I hope that you choke on one of your lies and you know what it's like to suffocate. And I wrote that down and said it out loud to my class. And my teacher, Miss D'Amico, was like, wow.
Miss D'Amico.
Wow. There's nothing else to say. That's very passionate.
That's beautiful.
What we're looking for. But I felt, and that was like at the time when I was listening to like a lot of like
Avril
Lavigne and like Kelly Clarkson. And so therefore by proxy, like checking out Alanis Morissette.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice journey.
Because that was their influence.
Yes. Very good.
I have a theory about this because I also got very into poetry when that was like what was offered in seventh grade. And I think it's just so little of our curriculum was like creativity based.
Yeah.
And there were so few outlets to like actually do anything creative in school.
Bingo.
So when that came up and they were like, oh, now you guys get to write something, we were all the little like nerdy, sensitive kids were like, okay.
Yeah. Like, want to know what I think.
I have feelings over here.
A lot. But also they weren't your real feelings.
No,
you know what I mean? They
were
these performative things that like you could maybe kind of hear in a pop song.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Can we talk about Brynn?
Okay,
oh,
wait.
Thank God.
Because I wanted to ask you this question because this is a unique position that you're in.
Listeners.
Because now, first of all, let's say there is two stars
on the rise.
Brynn and Maven, Beth and Peter McNerney's kids. You must follow them on Instagram because they're unbelievable. I think Brynn is actually a comedic genius.
Brynn is already a star.
And now I feel like you are in an amazing position because we ask our guests usually what culture shaped you, but now you get to kind of steer these kids into what kind of culture they're seeing. And I know some stuff, but what are Brynn and Maven like? What are they watching? What are they absorbing? What are they discussing?
Okay. Well, it changes week to week. I think you probably saw on Instagram this week it was Secret Life of Pets.
No.
Home Alone. Secret Life of Pets was like musically a very big hit for them because it has like big pop songs.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And they both were just shaken around to it.
Yes. shaken around. I love it. Brynn's dancing.
Home Alone is actually like not really grabbing Brynn. Like he enjoyed that scene because we kind of like put it in front of him. But the show, the movie as a whole is not like have enough like music or cartoons for him to be drawn in, I guess.
Totally.
He probably just knows the screenplay logistically is a huge mess. You know, he's saying, I don't think so.
Yeah.
What's the tension?
I don't know. He's lately he's been pretty into the movie Inside Out, which is teaching him about feelings.
Yeah,
which
that's
I think
good.
Is good for him because he's like mimicking the emotions.
We've seen that.
Yeah. And he's like, he was like a couple weeks ago he was like crying about something and I was like, what's going on? He's like, I sad.
Aww.
And
he knows.
He had a name to put to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was good. What else? He was really into Cars for a while.
I was
going to
say,
kind
he
of
loved Cars.
Film. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Well, I guess, is this part of Matt's question? Like, is there stuff that you and Peter want to eventually introduce to Brynn? Like,
I mean, we definitely like started a little bit, but some stuff is too old for him. Peter pushed like Dumbo pretty hard, which I'm not a huge fan of.
It's a fine movie.
It's just one of those things, like whatever movie you watched 8 million times as a child, you kind of want to see how your child reacts to it. So that was his thing. He also likes The Wizard of Oz, but that's like too old for Brynn.
Yeah.
And I pushed Mary Poppins because that's like my childhood thing.
Yeah.
Growing up. That was like,
explains why you're so dark.
Yeah. Why I'm so dark. In my household, we owned two videos for most of my childhood, and it was The Wizard of Oz and Mary Poppins. And The Wizard of Oz was terrifying to me. So we watched Mary Poppins over and over again. But So he is like pretty into that.
Nice.
And that's where he, I don't know if you've seen his Instagrams where he tells jokes, but that is from a Mary Poppins scene where they sing I Love to Laugh and they tell jokes. So yeah.
We love the awareness of how funny he knows he is.
He knows he's funny.
Yeah.
He says regularly, I'm so funny. So, you know, he's now aware of his power, I think.
I clocked this early on because one of the first Brin videos that
I clocked this because in a Brin video. Peter posted, and I call them Brinstagrams.
Brinstagrams. Peter posted, I think it was like the second ever Brin video of Brin just, I think he must have not even been a year old. Maybe he was like a year and a half, 2 years old, sitting at on his high chair. And Peter, just from camera, off screen, is doing a little sound. And then Brin mimics it.
Yeah.
And then Peter laughs. And then as a response, Brin starts laughing. And it was one of the most... Yeah. One of the most heartwarming.
We're also blown away, I think, because we don't have any children to watch go through this. So we're like literally watching and be like, oh my God, this is how it works.
Yeah. No, I think it's fun for us as like creative people to have kids that have like creative impulses and to like probably overly nurture them. Because our parents were like not always like super into our creativity. So it's like we're probably like nurturing it too much,
right.
But it's fun to watch.
Well, you mean you and
Peter? No, I know. I think it's great.
But you're creating beautiful monsters.
But like, great. Yeah. Brin is like a natural performer and he loves attention. So like anytime you are into him repeating something, he's like, okay, here you go.
I said the most surprising, consistent, and prolific performer in this community is Brin.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know it.
No,
yeah. He has an awareness of the camera that I don't even have at this point, where I'm like, oh, I need to like blink less. Yeah. And he's just,
there was this weird moment a few months ago where I was filming him on the phone and he knew I was filming him. So he was kind of performing for the phone. Mm. And then at a certain point, it's like, I was like, you know, filling up my phone too much. So I turned off the record and he was like, he could tell that I wasn't recording and that I was just going through the motions. And he kind of like called me out on it. He was like, no. Like, he like, it's just like so funny. Like he could sense, like, he was like, this needs to be.
What a command. I mean, that's the other side of.
That's the X factor.
That's the other side of the coin to like that baby trying to flip over.
Entrepreneur.
Trying to zoom into a book, you know?
Yes.
This is like the other side of that where it's like, this is the good thing that technology is giving to the new generation.
Well, I have to say, if there's one that I want everyone to watch, and this to me is the iconic one, it's Brin gets on the phone and has a conversation in gibberish, full gibberish, nothing. But the inflections are so that you will follow the conversation the every step of the way.
Oh, my God.
And it's... There's a perfect pauses, and he really is listening, and then he's just like, no, this is done, but it's just like yeses and nos and affirmatives. It's mind blowing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then Peter goes, are they saying bye? And he goes, bye bye! And then he hangs it up.
Iconic. Yeah. Guys, everyone watch it. Is that on Peter's handle? Or is that
I think
Beth's?
That's a Peter.
That's a Peter one, I think.
Great.
But
this is a great channel strategy. Two separate accounts.
Yes.
Gotta follow both to synchronize
because everything. Then one day Brin will want to have an Instagram. And then
and you'll have amassed the followings of both you and Peter.
It'll be an event.
Yeah. It's gonna be a very popular teen.
Very popular teen. Speaking of content. I had this like genuine question now for you guys. Now that we're like post-election, have you guys had any meetings so far to talk about any, I don't know, like tactical or like, oh, sounds so stupid, like strategy shifts like post election, just to like in terms of like the way you write things or the way you cover things or whatever?
I mean, we've had like informal conversations about it. Like there's definitely like baseline, we're never going to waste our time covering like Trump's small hands or like when like that, just like any kind of like normalization, like you would a normal president, that's not, but.
Yeah,
we've agreed like the Trump presidency is a women's issue. So like that is fair game on Reductress.
But yeah,
totally.
It's we've like, I don't know. I guess we've had a lot of these conversations like in our own heads. But like that's kind of like a thing we had about Trump already, was like, we're not going to do like the small hand stuff and we're not going to like take the easy jokes because it's like, why, I guess, like when everyone else is doing that. Like, I don't know. I also have like. ever since he was like hitting like mass media coverage early in the election and people were like, stop covering him, he's getting all this attention, but then everyone just kept covering him.
Yeah.
My feeling is sort of like, he's sort of like an abuser. Like, we keep having these sexual assault scandals in our community.
Mm-hmm. Can't stop.
And I'm sort of like, every time it happens, I'm like, it's not about that guy. Mm-hmm. It's about us all trying to protect ourselves mm-hmm. from these types of guys.
Yeah.
It's not this one guy. So like, when I talk about it, I don't like to be like, so-and-so did this, blah, 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 I hate so-and-so. I want to talk about like, why did these people behave this way and how are we not looking out for women and blah, blah, blah. So when it comes to Trump, I still am just like, I don't want to do a lot of Trump coverage. I don't want to like, I mean, we do cover him for sure,
yeah,
but like
when it's justified.
Yeah. Like, yeah. How can we talk about this and how can we talk about the forces at play without just being like, Trump is a bad man?
Well, what's so great about Reductress, I think, just as someone that enjoys the comedy of it, is how specific it always is. So like, you don't want to do just like this. You expect like to hear something about, you know, Trump
and
with
maybe
Russia.
That,
it's just
right.
like it's something specific that pertains to and is in the voice of your magazine, and so like that has to be
right. And my question might have been like a little simplistic then, just to be like, well, since the presidency is now a women's, is like a very gendered thing now, have things changed? But maybe that's like not even that might be a lazy assumption.
I mean, like go ahead.
It's a good question. I do think like there was definitely some questioning ourselves after the election of like, are we being too smug?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think everyone's asking themselves, like, have we been a little bit smug as liberals, like assuming we were going to win this thing and just being like, oh, they're dumb, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And now we're sort of like, how do you like actually reach out to people? And like, I don't know.
But I think it's what we were just saying, is that there's power in sort of not pointing or mentioning the thing. I don't know. It's like,
well, I would imagine that the way, because you guys get pitches from all the writers. So it's like you guys look at all the pitches you get, and is maybe this is a question, I guess. Is it more, wow, let's sit down and talk about what we want to do and then let's look at everything? Or you just kind of look at what you have and like look at the kind of thoughts that you guys are getting and then say, this feels right? Or like,
for topical stuff, we do a lot of that chat in-house, mm-hmm. because it's a lot of like, okay, we know this broad thing is a problem, but like, let's break it down to the like micro issues. And right. a lot of it's just like throwing that micro issue out and seeing what people have on it. And a lot of that stuff is done in-house. I mean, every once in a while we get like freaking home runs out of people from outside, but
right.
mm-hmm. topical, I think like a group effort makes all the difference in terms of really being specific and not just being like, Trump sucks.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I also, like, one of my comedy philosophies is if you're doing a topical joke about the thing that everyone's talking about, you kind of do want to hit the nail on the head in terms of what the thing is. Like, mm-hmm. you want to have an original take on that topic, but you don't want to, like, skirt the issue at hand.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously, we're not as mainstream as like SNL, but we do want to like speak to people about like what's actually on their mind. So we don't need like the most creative, like philosophical side issue part of this joke. I don't know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
There was a headline in the wake of that whole sexual assault stuff at UCB that one just like really like blew me away. It was, I made up my sexual assault for all the attention.
Oh, I anonymously reported my rape for the anonymous attention.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Like, I just thought,
so good.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that,
like,
that
I was like, that says it right there. I mean, like, how you read this and like, what are you going to say? What, like,
yeah.
That whole thing was such nonsense. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but I mean, and this goes back to topicality and hitting the issue on the head. That whole page that one day was just it was just, the circumstances were horrible surrounding it, but just like a very satisfying thing to, or not satisfying, but at least like, I don't know. Comforting is not the right word either, but you know what I mean? Like, I
cathartic.
Saw that.
I think it was. Did.
Yeah. I can say it was cathartic for us in the office.
Cathartic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Whatever, that's like, what attention it did or didn't get, like, we felt better at the end of the day just being like, this is how we feel.
Yeah. yeah. Sometimes you just fantastic. Want someone to say what you're feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's just like,
yeah, because we were, oh God, we felt so shitty in the office that week. Like, nobody was getting anything done. Like,
yeah.
if we weren't going to attack what the thing that was wearing us down, like, we would have just been shitty all week. So it was good to just approach that. It sucks that it's now an issue again. And now we realize, like, the way the news cycle goes, it's like, oh, we're going to be constantly like dealing with abortion stuff. We're constantly going to be dealing with rape culture. And, you know,
it's insane. Like, in addition to us just having elected, basically someone who's committed sexual assault to like the highest office in our country, is like, we haven't had, I personally feel like I haven't had like a vacation or like a break this year that hasn't been heavily dominated by like rape allegations, like, because it keeps coming up. And I mean, I know that's like sort of like a very like privileged problem to have, that I'm like, oh, my vacation is dominated by like discussing someone else's like sexual assault. Like, obviously it's not as bad as like living it, to be sure, but it's just like, it's constantly there, you know, like it's just our whole lives this year has spent, it's just been one after another.
It's so, but it's like always been happening. We're just now aware of it. And it's just like every other freaking problem in the world. Like, we know so much now, and now we have to do something about it.
Like, having to explain to my relatives who legitimately think that all of a sudden these Black Lives Matter people are being out of control. It's like, no, they're just now given the opportunity to speak out about this because they're able to record it on their phones. Like, the media is so, I mean, and just technology now is so sensitive. We can get these things on camera. For years, we haven't been able to get them on camera, and you never believed.
You know what's amazing about that, too, is, like, when did camera phones become, like, ubiquitous? 2008. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, ask any conservative whatever in your family, and they're like, huh, kind of weird that ever since Obama was elected, Black Lives Matter was a thing. It's like, I wonder why.
It might have to do with the eye thing. It's shocking. These Trump people, they really go to bat. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what's logical anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what's sensical. And, you know, on the flip side, it's like, sometimes I think about myself, you know, was I willing to do that for my candidate? And I think it is partially true.
I always ask that. If Kanye West ran on the Democratic ticket, would I vote for him over Mike Pence, Marco Rubio? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would think about it real hard.
But if he was running on the Democratic ticket, he wouldn't appoint a bunch of white supremacists to his cabinet.
There's that.
God.
But yeah, I do constantly ask myself, like, are Democrats actually better in practice or just in theory? Because I do think, like, I do think we're better on average.
Yeah.
But when you look at, like, media and so many things where, like, in terms of, like, representation, where we're just, like, shutting people of color out of every, you know, high position and or, like, every TV show, you know, it's like, okay, we're not doing so great. Like,
we're not doing so great, but look, this is what the Making Oprah podcast is sort of about, is that she realized that intention was, like, the big thing. Like, for the Oprah show to transition from, like, just, like, trashy, like, tabloid TV to, like, almost spiritual things, she, like, Oprah had to shift her thinking in terms of what she wanted to, how she wanted to impact people. I feel like as long as liberals are mean, and I say this as a person of color and a gay man and all this stuff, I feel like as long as liberals honestly mean well, hopefully the rest of, like, everything else falls into place. That sounds like a very
idealized thing. And you know what? Sometimes I think there is the absolute not, like, self-belief that you do mean well, but there is that black hole, or that kind of, like, what's it, like a blind spot where it's like, you know, you took to your computer in the morning to speak about social issues. Meanwhile, like, the person that voted for Trump, like, has like a foot of snow at their door and they can't afford a shovel. So they were dealing with that and didn't have time to think about the social issue and don't know what the social issue is. And because they don't know what it is, they can't have an opinion on it. And so they're just trying to, like, all they know is it's bad and I have to vote. So it's like, I'm trying to think, how can we get to the point where we can all really even begin to be on the same page?
Have a middle class. Have a strong middle class.
But that's, I think, people in media have to, like, be a little more comfortable, I think, like, not having such, like, a, like, intellectual hot take and just, like, being informative on a really basic level.
Right.
Because I think that's the thing that conservatives and like Trump especially has done is like they have these slogans that are like make America great again. And to like the average person that has to like get their kids to school and pay their rent and whatever, they're like, okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't have time for a lot more than that. Yeah. So if you could just make it digestible.
Right. The, you know? The Democratic message was an anti-message. It was in response to that. It wasn't like a statement of itself.
Yep. Yeah, it was like, no, America is great.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, for you. I just saw a picture of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama clinking wine glasses in the sky.
No.
It's like, that's it was bad tough.
Press. It was bad press.
You know what I mean? Like, it, I don't know. It's something to think about. And I really don't, I don't want to feel scared saying it's something to think about.
You know.
Because now you get online and it's like, you can't say the right thing. Mm. But, you know, and it becomes scary, which is, I think, what, like, kind of what you were saying before. It's like, not only is there not a break from it in the news cycle, there's not a break from it in the Facebook feed. Like, it's not this place where you just go to do stupid bits anymore. Like, what I loved about it was, like, you know, when we would do dumb Instagram bits.
And now I miss that. Like, I want it back. Well, but I know, how can you bear to do it?
Yeah,
but
I know it's tough.
I think what you were saying, Bowen, about intention is, I think, like, beyond intention, I think liberals have to be okay with things being actually a little bit of work.
Sure.
And I think, like, we want to be like, I am on the right side of this. I just signed a petition. Uh-huh. Boom. Done. And, like, it's like, if you want to have more diverse representation in whatever field you work in, it's harder than that. You have to actually reach out to people you don't know and, like, go out of your way to do that. And the first diverse person you ask is going to be unavailable, and you have to be like, I know diverse person is like a weird thing to say,
no, whatever.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you, it's like, it's actual work to fix things.
For sure,
and
for
like
sure.
To undo the legacy of slavery, slavery is not like, boom, we fixed it. Like, we have to like actually do something about that.
I have a question for you guys. Did you guys watch Westworld?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you guys have a hard time with it in the beginning because of like the kind of violence against women? Because it kind of got like a weird rap in the beginning because it was a very HBO-ish kind of show where it was like,
treat women horribly.
I mean, I understand why I was there. I'm not like triggered by that stuff. Like, because like, of course, if there was like a robot world, men would fuck and rape robots.
It made sense to me. I don't know. I just,
I'm like, oh, that's the world as I see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
On point.
That's the thing I have trouble with is like certain people criticizing the show for violence against women or criticizing any show for like nudity or whatever. And I'm just like, but rape does happen in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So are we never allowed to depict it? And then what's the scenario we're in if we just never depict the reality we live in?
And even when it's going to take a stance, even the fact that that show is about the fact that like this is like where it's gotten to in this world where entertainment is rape and violence and all these things, like, if, but people are like, eh, well, it still did like use it for viewers. And it's like, so wait, are we in this weird kind of like paradox where we can never talk about it? And like, how do you expect a visual medium to address this then?
Exactly. No, I think, I mean, like, we have to accept, because it's so much more insidious when we don't talk about it directly.
Yes.
And I feel this way about this KKK show on A&E too. Like, I haven't seen it, so who knows?
Yeah.
It could
be
extremely poorly executed, but to actually like see that on screen, a reasonable person, right?
Yeah.
A person who could be on the fence of X and Y should not be like, that's a good idea. But when we just don't talk about it and we just have our like weird racist uncles who say like things under their breath, then I don't know. I think that's much more dangerous.
I don't know.
Because those people vote and they don't talk about it. But
yeah.
You know, like KKK, we can point at that and be like, that's alive and well. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sean King like wrote about the show, and having seen the pilot, he was like, I think it's good that we're exposing these people, but at the same time, I mean, you have to weigh the risks on that.
Well, it's like, what's the intention here? It's like we said before, is it to entertain and to sensationalize, or is it to inform and expose?
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm worried that like, because of the Duck Dynasty situation, this isn't going to be done well. If it were an actual documentary that had a point.
Yeah.
Supposedly people are involved are saying that it's done in the right tone, but I think it is one of those things where it's like more of a big picture discussion than just that show, because that show on its own is not necessarily bad. bad, but it's like, hey, A&E, like, are you representing people of color on any of your shows?
Right.
Because if you're going to do a show about racists, like, maybe also have some other shows about, like, right. other groups of people.
Black Lives Matter group.
Have you guys watched the Leah Remini show?
No.
Excellent. Oh, oh so God. Well done.
I'm
no people of color on it, but
well, you know, it's
but you know, it's good. Like the first three episodes, and it's not good in that like a ooh yes juicy. It's good in like these people are really sharing these tough stories, and it I would say impossible to watch it and not say yeah this can't. This has to go. Yeah. I think that something's going to happen.
Good.
Like, the way that the show is moving along, it's just making such a clear case every episode, really, from every standpoint on why this cannot stand. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and the next episode, I'm so excited, because the next episode is going to be all about this David Miscavige character, who's, like, the Pope of Scientology. Mm-hmm. And this is going to, like, expose him and really go after him. And I think this guy...
He's
a really evil person that's living in this world. Mm-hmm. And I really recommend watching the show just to get informed about it. I actually have a family friend that lost someone to Scientology. Yeah. And I can tell you, this isn't this thing that like, and I feel bad even making jokes about it sometimes. Like, but because I know for a fact, this isn't this thing that exists out there. That like happens to people in California or Tampa. It happens to people everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like this is a real cult, yeah. And it takes people away from their families. And I hope something goes down with it.
Because... But meanwhile, Matt has been balancing that with Mariah's World,
and then you have Mariah's World, which is exposing in its own way. Have you guys watched Mariah's World?
Because I've only watched clips.
If you have to put one thing. At the top of the list, it's Mariah's World.
If, that's a light. That's a light in the world.
If only because of all the side characters. Like, talk about Yes Men.
Yeah.
Like, the show is executive produced by Mariah, who's horizontal the whole show.
Every she's confessional, lying she's down, sprawled on a settee, just like...
Always.
I can't believe... Blah, 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 blah. Lit. Like, yeah.
The face beat to the gods. Like, she's just so... It's so skewed.
It's so
and the
funny.
Show is about how... Everyone around her is stressful and a problem except her. She's the one who keeps it all together.
I love it. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Did you ever see it was like a MTV Cribs that they went to Mariah's house and she put on like a teddy and like high heels and then went to her workout room and she was like, I don't know how to use any of these machines.
Yeah, no, yes, I have to use that. She gets on like a workout machine in her high heels and she's just like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I love her.
She's insane. Oh, I mean, she was my first concert. She was like part of my childhood. Like, I was a Mariah stan. Like, I knew all the words to all the songs. Like, she was my life. So now to see, like, what she is, which is, like, a true Frankenstein.
You know what's really funny?
I mean, she truly is.
The funny thing is, like, when you were a kid, my mother was being like, I remember Mariah when she was sweet. Like, the early 90s Mariah. Like, she has just, like, devolved every decade.
My first CD was Mariah Carey, and my cool aunt got
What was
it?
Which album was it?
Dream?
Fantasy.
That was the one with the, like...
Daydream.
Daydream. That was with, like, Always Be My Baby and all that.
That was her, like, kind of, like... She started to get more like upbeat and like a little bit of R&B was coming in.
Yeah.
We had Music Box in the house and that had Hero on it.
Mm.
And that was like her huge song when she was like a torch song goddess. And then the album that like changed my life at 7 years old.
Rainbow? No.
Butterfly. Which was her first album outside of being married to her manager who was like a true monster.
Sure. I mean, Mariah's seen some shit.
Yeah, she's fucked
no
up.
No one can deny this. Okay.
She's one of them. Like, she's like a Britney Spears, Michael Jackson level, like, fucked up. I'm nervous for her. The show is nuts.
Show is nuts. I hope...
The show's nuts.
I hope and I pray that she, you know, she'll make it.
Apparently, she has, like, a sense of humor, which is a good sign.
Right? Yeah. That's good.
That's, like, the kind of person, like, from your high school or whatever, like, you go over their house, and the whole time you're just, like, wide-eyed, like, bugged out. Like, what is happening here? Like, they just have, like, the crazy mom that's, like,
right. Oh, that's
there's crazy. A dog behind a door that's screaming.
Yeah. Oh god. Yeah. The carpet is
shut
freaky.
Up! That was real.
What do you guys want to eat?
Oh my god.
Want some hot dogs? Then she goes to open the fridge and it's empty. Yeah.
This is like made of red flags. Okay, so this is what all of our listeners have been waiting for. This is the cornerstone of the episode. This will take us to fame someday. I don't think so, honey.
We take 1 minute to rail against something in culture, and that is even just not, that is even too specific. Something. Talk about anything you want that's pissing you off. Yeah. Anything, anyone. Whatever.
All the ticks and tacks. You just have to say, I don't think so, honey. Mm.
Guys, just a little thing. Matt has already coined so many indelible little phrases on this podcast. His newest one he's trying out is ticks and tacks.
All the ticks and tacks.
So just be on the lookout for that.
So just, you know, maybe try using it in a sentence today.
Yeah. Hmm. All the ticks and tacks. Great. Matt, do you have something? I don't have anything prepared.
I have a little something.
Okay, girl.
Okay. Can you put me on the clock?
I'll put you on the clock. So Matt and I will do it first, and then we'll hand it.
Okay.
Cool.
Now,
guys, cool.
Potentially in mine, there will be a little bit of a spoiler, but I'm going to try to keep it as clean as possible. But this is a culture podcast, and so I'd be remiss to not say my feelings about this particular thing.
Here we go. Matt Rogers, I don't think so, honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Star Wars Rogue One and your animation on characters from the old movies. I don't think so, honey. Grand Moff Tarkin is in this movie looking like Super Mario. I don't think so, honey. Cast another actor. We know him well. Peter Cushing was his name. He played the character. I don't think so, honey. He comes in looking like someone from Halo video game. I don't think so, honey. I want to see human faces. You want to reboot this franchise? You want to give me strong female leads? I'm all about it. But also, give me humanity. Give me something I can latch on to. Don't give me a human actor talking to a screen. And also, at the end, spoiler alert, Princess Leia is in it looking like her face was about to slide off. She's in it, and also they used Carrie Fisher's old dialogue, and I don't think so, honey. I want to hear Carrie Fisher right now. Attack this reality head on. She's a horse woman. She's seen it. Her voice is, she's been through it. She's been to hell and back, and I want to see the real Carrie Fisher on screen. There's not enough Carrie Fisher in film.
That's 1 minute. Oh, my God. And by horse woman, you mean H-O-A-R-S-E.
Yes.
Her voice now is just beautiful. But
oh my god,
so
but it's seen the years. Mm.
Yes.
And also the revelation that she and Harrison Ford were fucking all those years.
Dynamite.
Wild.
Love it.
Crazy.
You hear about this?
Oh, yeah, no. I did hear about it.
Oh, you did hear about it. Wait, so she's come out and confessed that during the whole Star Wars, not only was she totally zoned out on coke, but she was also fucking Harrison Ford the whole time.
I mean, you gotta kill time.
You gotta.
Those movies are long.
They're so long. And apparently they were just on such hard drugs filming those scenes like in Hoth.
It was the 80s.
It was just like, God. Apparently they would just do lines of coke and then go on the screen and like act and say this like insane dialogue.
That's
well.
So proud.
So proud.
Cautionary anyway, tale. I liked the movie Rogue One. I just didn't agree with the way that they chose to recreate the old actors from the movie. It's video game nonsense.
You just spoiled that for me. Just
Princess Leia is at the end of the movie. If you were curious about what happens with the plans for the Death Star.
A lot of Star Wars fans listen to this podcast.
I think so. You're all out there. I think you'd be surprised. I think Star Wars is like pretty gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a queer narrative for sure.
I think so.
Yeah.
Luke. Gay.
Chosen.
The Dagobah system.
Chosen family.
Queer. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything.
Well, here we go.
No, you know what? I got something.
Maybe it would be nice to ask one of our guests if they want to go.
Did you guys want to go first?
No, hit it.
Okay, great.
You got something, go for it.
You go.
Thank you.
Ready? Bone Yang, I don't think so, honey, starts.
Wait. Oh my God, wait, hold on. No.
No, we don't have a lot of time.
Okay, all right, fine. You know what? Go.
Bone Yang, I don't think so, honey, starts now.
I don't think so, honey, incompetent baristas. I know this is a well-trod subject. I know, like, every barista is, like, a bumbling fool, but I met one today that really just really got to me and got under my skin. This is at the Starbucks on Spring Street and I want to say 6th Avenue, right across from Trump Soho. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Names.
So their carafes of milk and dairy were out. So I just needed any type of dairy. I don't think so, honey. This barista, I went up to this gentleman. I asked him for some half and half if he had some from behind the counter. He said, sure, but wait 1 minute. And he was, meanwhile, just trying to fucking chum up to some rich asshole who was just, like, hanging at the counter, hovering. I don't think so, honey. This barista, he took a solid 10 minutes to get me any type of dairy, mama. And I just wanted to make my Americano less harsh so it didn't run right through me. I don't think so, honey, baristas. I don't think so, honey, Starbucks baristas who are not well trained, and that's 1 minute.
That's 1 minute, oh. Bowen Yang. Well, I don't think so, honey. I just want to say I've had a lot of really positive experiences with Starbucks baristas
you
recently.
Always undercut me. Always.
Okay, I've had a really good time with them all this Christmas season. I'm in particular enjoying the peppermint mocha frappuccino.
That's well, good for you.
Because wow. I'm bravely still drinking frappuccinos, which wow. famously are cold.
That's brave.
throughout this winter weather.
Okay.
Great.
I'm proud.
Sarah, you're up.
Wow. I'm going to process this in real time for what we just experienced while walking outside.
We always do because we truly don't choose one until the very last
fair
second.
Fair enough.
Sarah Pappalotto, I don't think so, honey, starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The old man yelling at his wife around the street, right outside on Broadway. It's like, excuse me. He's like, I can never do enough for you. And I'm like, oh, I know the backstory to this, honey. I know what you did. And I know this wife is just like, he has no fucking idea what he does. But she's going to say it. And he's just going to be like, what do I do? It's Christmas. I'm so sad. What do I do? I don't think so, honey. Maybe just like listen to what she's saying. And then maybe try to fix it. I don't know. Or maybe just like don't yell on the street. Because let me tell you, we were walking down the street and we walked an extra block. We walked an extra block. We were 10 minutes late here because of this guy good. Making no, a scene on the street. And I'm like, oh, I get it. It's all about you, honey.
Oh my God. You've got 13 seconds left.
I don't think so, honey. Listen to your wife. You're probably getting a divorce.
Wow. A swift one at 55 seconds. But, and you know
concise.
What? It was
you know,
concise and it got the point across.
I was just feeling it in real time.
We know Sarah. Exactly yeah. the way you felt. Yeah. And also, now we have an explanation as to the lateness.
No, but it was all worth it. Look, Beth, can you corroborate this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. It was me
right
me who spaced out. I was like, it was like a laser beam for wow. me. I couldn't look away. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But that is honestly like a... Like, you honestly have... We have to figure out as, you know, a society how to respond to those things. I remember a friend of the show, previous guest, Drezen, Anna Drezen.
Yeah.
Has told me multiple times... Unfamiliar. She...
Friend of the show.
Former guest.
She's, like, talked about, like, just witnessing these horrible interactions between men and their, like, significant others.
And
females.
What do you do, like...
And
yeah.
what do you do? Do you, like... I don't know. It's you know what? That's this weird. Is right for... conversation. Okay. Beth.
Next episode, the sequel. All right, Beth, here we go. Are you ready? Do you have
yeah.
something picked out? All right, good.
Great.
Here we go. Go!
I don't think so, honey. People who think reverse sexism is a thing.
Yes!
Okay. Take a look at power dynamics. Take a look at history. Take a look at right now and what's going on in this country. Women do not have more power than you, so just no. sit down and relax, okay? Us calling you out on your bullshit and your power and what you're doing to us is not the same as you... walking all over us.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
I don't think so, honey. I know your little feelings are hurt because you've never experienced actual oppression, but I don't think so, honey, little white men.
Oh.
That is not oppression, okay? I'm sorry you had to read a thing that made you reconcile what you are doing to people around you. I don't think so, honey. It's not happening. You are hurting people. You are the one that is hurting us. Okay, I don't think so, honey. Reverse sexism is not a thing.
And that's
we got it.
Wow.
And you know what? We covered all different. We got
wow.
every angle.
Yes.
I think we got all the culture.
Social, political. Yeah. We went cinematic.
Yes.
We got on the ground in New York City.
Look, and let's just pour one out for the men out there who are quick to defend accused sexual assault.
Yeah.
Honestly,
wow.
lighters up for the straight white men who get more upset when the Yankees lose than when a racist brings their whole crew to Washington. I see you screaming at the televisions. I grew up with you all around me, and I have
men.
My lighter up for you.
Yes, God.
And Jimmy Buffett is playing. Guys,
oh, nice.
What an episode. I mean, you guys, first of all, you must pick up the book, How to Win at Feminism.
You must listen.
It's so funny.
Yes.
It's so great.
You
yes.
must listen to the podcast, Mouth Time.
Mouth Time with the incredible, smart, brilliant Nicole Silverberg and the garbage Rachel Winnowski. Truly a garbage bag.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Future guest. Maybe. We'll see how we feel.
If you're in LA, come see us at the Comedy Store on January 16th and on the 17th in San Francisco at Sketchfest.
Ooh, yes. Prestigious San Francisco Sketchfest.
Incredible. And also check out Ha Ha Wow, right?
Yeah, Ha Ha Wow at UCB Theater.
Yeah, January 12th, I believe.
Look, what a great January.
Incredible. A stacked January.
For a terrible January event, just as it surrounds a terrible January event. But
what will happen? We'll find out. Out, and okay. We'll talk about it.
Okay, girl, this has been Bo and Yang.
And this is Matt Rogers, and this is the Las Culturistas podcast. Thank you so much, forever dog. I look you in the eye as I say that, baby. All right, bye.
Forever dog. This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.